Welcome back to the Caught Red Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Jesse Light.
I'm Megan Light.
We are just two dog lovers talking about true crime, horror movies, and most likely our dogs too. And before we get started today, I wanted to give a quick shout out to the Lawrence Herd because we saw your review that you gave us on Apple.
And
we appreciate it. It was like 2 weeks ago and I just now saw it.
We're on top of things.
Yeah. If you don't know about these guys, they're our kind of people.
Critters.
Yeah, I think they got like 8 or 9 critters. They love true crime. They love horror movies.
Chihuahuas.
All the little dogs that you could ever imagine.
Huskies.
But they've started a nonprofit organization, so their goal is to save animals in need and provide support to community organizations that are working to solve the animal rescue crisis. So check them out on Instagram. They've got shirts, hoodies, joggers, mugs.
I have a mug.
Hats. Yeah.
Go buy something and support them. That's what we're trying to say.
Pretty much. Other than that, I watched a movie without Megan.
And that sounds so rude.
We've both seen Dale and Tucker, or what's it called?
Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
And I actually watched another movie with the same guy. Is it Dale? Dale's the bigger guy.
I can't remember. I just always remember him as this character, Sock. From a show called Reaper. So every time I see him, I'm like, hey, look, it's Sock.
I've never seen that. Okay, it is Dale. I've checked. He is in Cottage Country, which is a comedy horror movie, kind of like Dale and Tucker, Tail and Ducker.
I said that the other day, didn't I?
Tail and Ducker?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It was hilarious. Very stupid, but enjoyable. It's basically when a man accidentally kills his brother with an axe, his fiance is determined not to let even murder stand in the way of their happiness.
Oh, no.
It's so out of control. It's perfect. So, yeah, go check that one out.
What's it called?
Cottage Country, and it's on Prime Video. And we watched It Lives Inside together.
Yes, that's on Hulu.
That was pretty dang good.
I liked it. I don't know much about Indian folklore or their different gods or all that. So that was very
Now we know a little cool. bit about it, though.
Mm, I was telling Dad about it. He's like, oh, okay.
That one had some jump scares.
You tried to scare me. And I was like, what are you touching me for? Watch the movie.
We had to close our closet door that night, though.
Oh, yes. When she looked and she saw the eyes and shine the light, her clothes are moving, and then she takes the light back down and the eyes are still there.
And then the
that
eyes
was
close.
Badass.
Oof.
That was good.
Freaky. But yeah, that one is an Indian American teenager struggling with her cultural identity, has a falling out with her former best friend, and then in the process unwittingly releases a demonic entity that grows stronger by feeding on her loneliness.
Very good.
I could watch that one again. Other than that, I watched a little bit of Strays with Mowgli. Megan didn't want any part of that.
I was like crying at the very beginning.
She didn't realize it was a comedy.
I get that it was supposed to be a comedy, but the way that he treated his baby, I couldn't do it. I was like, no, not watching it. We're going to bed.
And then the other dog started talking shit about his owner, like, because the dog that got abandoned thought that that's how a person was supposed to treat their dog.
I know, and that's what's breaking my heart. I couldn't watch it.
I didn't finish it. Mowgli was watching it with me. He enjoyed it.
He loves watching dogs on TV.
And I'm surprised when we watch Jurassic Park, he's not, like, glued to the TV. Like, when the raptors come out or something, you would think
Well, he doesn't really like Ripley, and Ripley's part rapper, so he's not going to pay any attention.
True. And then other than that, I put on Pitch Perfect, and Megan dropped everything she was doing to watch it with me. So I know if I want to get her attention, that's all I got to do is just play that really loud.
Bop, bop, bop.
Yeah,
I was in the back. I was in the bathroom, and he had just turned it on, and the very beginning credits were not even started yet. It was just like the 21st Century Fox logo, and I said, are you watching Pitch Perfect?
It doesn't even sound like it would be Pitch Perfect. It sounded like it would be Minions or something, but she got it. Nailed it.
I knew exactly what it was. I was like, I'm on my way. Here I come.
Megan's got a case for us today, so I will shut up and let her do her thing.
Just shut up, shut up.
You ready to do this thing?
Forever and a day.
Ugh.
Hmm. My sources are the Snowden Family Papers. I went across quite a few Find a Graves, the Memphis Magazine, Barnett Falls, Arkansas Court Connect, because, you know, that's my jam. The Arkansas Times, a few articles from People Magazine, the Memphis Commercial Appeal, which is also a paper of some kind, NBC News, AY Magazine, Realtor.com, and then People Magazine Investigates is like their true crime little series.
All over the place while you're on your walking treadmill.
Dude,
with your
love
desk
it.
And everything.
I love it. I feel so productive. Normally, I am the one that branches out, but I'm going to do Arkansas today. And the last one that I did from here was episode 67, and now we're on 77, which...
That was the last Arkansas case you did?
That I did, yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. And the number that we're at now makes me think that we're so close to 100. I mean, we still have quite a bit of ways to go.
It'll be here before you know it.
That's a big deal. Yeah, we have to...
75 was a big deal, and we just let it go by.
Oh, well. We're going to have to brainstorm something to do for the big 100. So
somebody did request
one, or off-the-wall one, something that's both.
There was a recommendation for the Toy Box Killer. We could always do that one.
Okay.
It's up to you.
Or a local one.
Or a local one. Memphis 3. Or the Boys on the Tracks.
Keep your Memphis 3 comment in your head, okay?
Why?
I want to talk. Well, I'm not going to talk about it, but just hold that thought.
Okay.
Okay. Today's episode is going to be one that has a bit of I told you so, and a little bit of a deja vu effect. And no, love, I'm not talking about your Denzel movie, Deja Vu.
I watched that the other day, too.
Did you really?
Yeah.
But the way that those two, the I told you so and the deja vu, come into this story, it's going to be sad. And really, in the end, it shouldn't have even happened. This whole thing could have been avoided.
Always the case.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where Horseshoe Lake is?
No. I've heard of like Horseshoe Bend. I don't know if that's the same area.
Well, it's way east of us here. It would take us like 3 hours to get there. It is in the southern part of Crittenden County. A couple other towns that are in Crittenden County would be like Marion and West Memphis. Horseshoe Lake is about 30 or 40 minutes from Memphis. It is close to the state lines of Arkansas, Tennessee, and Mississippi, like Tunica. And that area is about an hour and a half away. The town of Horseshoe Lake has maybe 300 people, give or take, because it's more of a tourist attraction. A place that you'd want to go for a little getaway, spend the weekend out on the lake. And so, yes, the town is named after the horseshoe-shaped body of water that is right next to it. It used to be 5 separate lakes and ponds, Horseshoe being the biggest. And then over time, it kind of swallowed Porter, Bushy, Goose, and Mud. anyone living in Horseshoe that was of school age would be sent out to West Memphis. There used to be a smaller school district in Hughes, Arkansas, but it eventually would merge with West Memphis in 2015. The family that more or less brought Horseshoe Lake, the town, to life is the Snowden family. The family's ancestors had come over from Scotland in the 1600s. It was Robert Snowden Jr., who was born in 1896, that settled in this area with his wife, Grace. And they have a cute little love story. They had planned to get married, and then World War I happened, and Robert went off to war. They couldn't get married until afterwards, and they didn't want to be apart for too long, so Grace became a nurse, so that way if Robert got hurt, she could take care of him. They both make it out safely, they get married, and then they wanted to find a place to call home. So Robert found this area, which is now Horseshoe Lake. He'd always wanted a farm, and the land was perfect. In 1919, the Horseshoe Plantation was built, and I would love to have seen it in its like original structure, because it's described as kind of like a cabin, very small, very simple. The plantation itself had over 1,000 acres of high-grade cotton. Robert had started a company to build command aircrafts in Little Rock. It shut down during the Great Depression, but it had made at least 350 planes. He'd always loved flying. After the closing of that company, Robert was quoted saying, "As an airplane manufacturer, I turned out to be a pretty damn good farmer." And business was in Robert's genetics. His father, Robert Sr., was 21 when he started the R.B. Snowden & Company, which was a mercantile business. Robert Sr. married Annie Brinkley, who was the daughter of a colonel and a prominent businessman in Memphis in 1868. And as a wedding gift, they were given the Hotel Peabody. Annie's father was Robert Campbell Brinkley. He established railroad systems between Little Rock and Memphis, Memphis to Charleston. He is who the town of Brinkley, Arkansas is named after.
I was about to ask.
And then Annie's mother, Ann Overton, was the daughter of Judge John Overton, who found the city of Memphis.
So some pretty important people.
Yes. Robert Jr. and Grace Snowden were well-liked and loved. They were a very giving couple. Robert liked being the center of attention, so maybe some of their contributions came from a selfish standpoint, but nonetheless, he helped out many people. He was given acknowledgement for his achievements in aviation and farming techniques. Robert and Grace had four children. There were three daughters and then one poor little boy who was outnumbered.
I just picture them being the type that are on the Titanic that are all hoity-toity and dressed up in their tuxedos and being all fancy.
We'll go first,
yes,
off the boat.
Yes.
Their cabin-styled home was too small to be comfortable and accommodate the family, having just one bathroom and all. In 1949, Everett Wood, who was a Memphis architect, was hired to make the home into the house that everyone would know it to be now. So it goes from this little cabin to a three-story, 6,000-square-foot showplace. The house, in all of its glory, would catch the eye of some movie producers. It was featured in a movie called The Client in 1994 with Tommy Lee Jones, Susan Sarandon, Will Patton, Bradley Whitford, and several others that if you got on your IMDb app, you'd be like, oh, dude, that guy.
Why haven't we watched this?
I don't know. I'll put it on the box. The Snowdens also built several little homes on the property to house farmers and other workers, and then eventually they would rent those houses out to friends and family that wanted to come to the lake and stay. In the 1990s, Sarah Day, or Sally, as she's known by, Snowden McKay would take ownership of the Snowden house and oversee the day-to-day events and activities. She was the most ideal child to be put in charge. She was a no-nonsense kind of gal, and she inherited that Snowden business mindset. She always stood her ground, and she would let you know what she was thinking and what her opinions were. while she was running things at the Snowden House, she didn't live there. And it had been many things over the years. Snowden House was an event center, practically a bed and breakfast. You name it, it's probably been it. And Sally was living in one of the many rental homes. And then in another house on the property was her nephew, Lee Baker, and his family. During the summer of 1996, the Baker family was in this other home that was still in Horseshoe Lake, but there was a fire and everything was gone. So Sally let them move into one of those rental homes. She didn't charge them or anything, but she let them live on the property with her, which helped because Lee would end up helping Sally run things on the property and everything that had to do with it. Tuesday, September 10th, 1996, the quaint and quiet town of Horseshoe Lake would be struck with tragedy. The day was like any other. Lee Baker woke up, got ready for work. Around this time of the month is when he would go around to their different little rental properties and collect rent. He and Sally would get together, update the record books, and then one of them would go make the deposit. Sometime that afternoon on the 10th, a fellow Horseshoe resident, Bobby Couples, came across a red Toyota Camry that had wrecked itself along Earl Beck Road. And Earl Beck Road is also known as Arkansas 147 South. And it's pretty much the street that you turn off of to go head towards Snowden House. The Snowden House was located at 1527 Bream Street. It appeared to be a single car accident, lying on its side. It looked like it went straight into a tree and then rolled into the ditch. Bobby Couples pulled up next to the Camry and went to check if anybody was hurt, but he found the car to be empty with the engine still running. He goes back to his own car and he goes up the road to this little grocery store. There's one in town. He asks the store owner if he knew who drove the red Camry in town. And of course, the only person that Levi, the store owner, can think of is Sally Snowden McKay. Concerned, he goes with Bobby and they go down to Sally's house to check in on her. And where the car had wrecked was only about a mile from her house. When they arrive, they do spot a white GMC Sierra pickup truck. That's what Lee Baker drove. The truck was backed in under the carport and was parked right up next to the door leading into the house. Not only did that seem a bit strange and a little extra, but the screen door had this big old slash through the middle of it. And then on top of that, the two men could smell smoke. They go to the nearest house, they call 911. It's a small town. There's not a police department. I don't know if they even had a fire department. So the first responders had to come from the Crittenden County Sheriff's Department. They arrive, they assess the scene, and they discover two bodies in the house. Sally Snowden McKay and Lee Baker. The two were partially burned, but that's not what killed them. They had been shot. Sally was leaving behind three daughters, Grace, Katie, and Martha, all older because Sally was 75 at this point. Lee was only 52. He had three boys, and they were all still growing. Not to mention, the Baker house had just burned down a month before, so I can't imagine what his wife and the boys are feeling. They've lost their home and all their belongings, and now their father, their husband, has been killed.
And the house was burning down at that time?
The house itself wasn't completely engulfed in flames, but where the bodies were was on fire.
Was it like gasoline poured out?
Some accelerant. Probably. That's probably the most likely. The Arkansas State Police and the Crittenden County Sheriff's Office combined forces to start investigating this arson and double murder. It was suspected that the motive behind it all was robbery, because remember, it was that time of the month that rent was due, and that meant that there would be a pretty large amount of cash in that house. And I don't know how many houses were on the property or how much they were charged for rent. I'm sure it was still a pretty penny back in 96. Among all the debris and the charred items in Sally's home, the investigators weren't able to find any evidence of a murder weapon or really much of anything to help. Sally's red Camry, however, gave them something. There were fingerprints all over the inside and the outside, especially along the passenger side. There was some hair discovered in the headliner of the car.
Was the car going away from her house?
Yes. The windshield had a massive crack in it. Investigators figured that the driver probably wasn't wearing his seatbelt, and when it crashed, he flew into the windshield from the inside, you know? From what it sounded like when I was reading, it sounded like the car was on its side. So the person driving was going to have to, like, climb out through the passenger window, so it was laying on the driver's side. Despite just learning that his father had been murdered, Joe Baker, who actually goes into law enforcement following this tragedy, informed the Arkansas State Police that their house appeared to have been broken into as well. And the house that the Bakers were now living in was next door to Sally's house, about 100 yards or so. So now there's two crime scenes. Surely they're related, because what are the odds? The Bakers' house had to have been burglarized the same day, maybe around the same time, and had to have been done by the same person or persons. While doing a canvas of the neighboring area of Earlbeck Road and Brim Road, a man, Joseph Jones, told the Arkansas State Police that the morning of the 10th, he saw Sally's Camry hauling ass. I was going to say hauling ass.
Hauling ass.
Down the road, going right past his house. But he didn't see Sally behind the wheel. He saw two young black men in the front seats. Arkansas State Police decided to run in their systems anyone that matches that description in the town of Horseshoe Lake and Hughes, and if any of those men had a criminal past. Crittenden County Sheriff's Office noticed one name immediately, 20-year-old Edric Smith. He was brought in, fingerprinted, hair sample taken, and he was polygraphed. But he had a very good alibi. He was seen as probation officer in Forest City, which is like a 45-minute plus drive. Edric had been arrested in June of 1995 for battery charges. In December of 95, he was found guilty of manufacture, deliver, and possession of controlled substances. Both charges made him a felon. He would have more charges over time, but those are the only ones that happened prior to 96. A week or so passes, interviews are going on, investigators bring Joe Baker in to ask him some more questions. He'd had some time to decompress, come to terms with his father's passing. They want to know if anyone comes to his mind when he thought about who could have done this. And really not so much the arson and the murder, because that's just extreme. Hopefully he doesn't know anybody along those lines. But, you know, what about somebody who could do this robbery since their house was also robbed? And Joe blurts out this name, like, immediately. Travis Lewis.
What did they steal exactly?
From?
The house?
Either house? Well,
from the Baker house.
It just said, like, $1,000s worth of items.
Okay.
Just random junk. It didn't really specifically say money, jewelry, things like that. Joe blurted out immediately Travis Lewis, who was like 15 or 16 at the time. Joe's reasoning behind naming Travis was because Travis had stolen from his family before. Joe wasn't home at the time because he's in college, but one of his brothers had said that the other Baker's son and Travis had all been hanging out playing video games. The Baker boys grew up with Travis and his family, so they've known each other their whole lives. So the Baker boys discovered that a few of their video games had gone missing, and it had to be Travis. And Lee, their dad, went to the Lewis house and confronted Travis's mom, Gladys. Travis owned up to having them, but said he didn't mean to steal them, like it wasn't intentional.
He was just borrowing them.
Right. But Joe also felt in his gut that the fire that had burned down their house was probably set as like retaliation to this incident by Travis.
Yet you're just hanging out with this kid all your life?
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's much to do in Horseshoe Lake. You don't get to pick your friends, I guess. I don't know. Arkansas State Police, with the assistant of the Hughes Police Department, went to the high school, which, again, doesn't exist anymore. It's now West Memphis High. The investigators learned that the morning of Tuesday, September 10th, Travis Lewis was not at school. He'd actually been suspended. So they go back to Horseshoe Lake to speak with Travis and his mother. Travis told investigators that he didn't know anything that had happened, but he was curious because he saw all these fire trucks going past his house. He said he was home all day. His mother, Gladys, confirmed his story, but she didn't know at the time that her son had even been suspended. She was probably just being a good mom and, you know, covering for her baby. And she probably had good reason because he's been in trouble before. A year prior, in 1995, Travis had taken a blank check from Sally's house, made it out to cash, and then forged her signature. And he also had a prior conviction for assault. Remember, he's like 16 at this time. That's a lot.
Real bright future for him.
Investigators end up giving Travis a polygraph, and he passes just barely. They called it borderline. They give him a couple more weeks. And then on November 4th, which is now like 2 months or so since the fire and the murders, they bring him in one more time, give him one more polygraph. Now he's failed it. And they've caught him off guard. So they want to give this opportunity and press him for some more information. He admits that on September 10th, yes, he was home, but only for a little bit. And in order to keep the suspicion from his mom that he got suspended from school, he left on his bike. And he has 4 siblings. I don't know if they lived with him and Gladys at the time or if they had already left for school or not. He had 3 sisters and 1 brother. And I've actually already mentioned his brother, Edric Smith.
Really now?
Really. Travis did have the idea to rob the Baker house that day. He knew Lee wouldn't be home because Lee was out working for Sally. Lee was collecting rent, including money from his own mother, because Gladys lived in one of the rent houses with her babies. So it's kind of like if you were to steal the rent money from Sally, it's like you're stealing from your mom because you stole her rent money.
Pretty much.
Yeah. While riding down the road, Travis said that he ran into his buddy Andre. Andre asked him what was up, and Travis told him what he was about to do. Andre wanted in, and he had his gun with him. Then Andre has this brilliant idea, make it a twofer. Travis would go to the Baker house, and then Andre, he would go into Sally's house. But Travis didn't want to go to Sally's house because he could see that her car was out front. Travis ended up taking a wooden mallet that he found and he broke a window to go into the Baker house. Sometime later, he said he looked and Andre was pulling up to the Baker house in Sally's red Camry. And he said that he needed help because he just killed 2 people. Andre didn't know what he was going to do, because the bodies were just there in the house. So both boys go back to Sally's and they're going to start trying to move these bodies. But Lee and Sally were too heavy. So the best idea they have to hide evidence was to burn the bodies and then burn the house. It was the boys that backed Lee's truck up against the house. It was them hauling Oss. Had to have been who Jones saw when he said he saw 2 young males flying past his house. Travis says Andre was driving and he's the one that crashed the car into the tree. So obviously, yes, the police are now going to be looking for this Andre character. According to Travis, once the car wrecked, Andre climbed out and he bolted. He doesn't know where he could be. At the end of Travis's interview, the police do go ahead and charge him with robbery because up to this point, that's all they had against him. But they needed to find his buddy and see what kind of story he had to tell. And they're going to have to start dragging Horseshoe Lake to see if they can find the gun because Travis told them that's where Andre had thrown it. There was a man who decided to come in and speak with the Arkansas State Police in regard to Andre. Jermaine Lowe was his name, and I did my best to decipher some interview notes because there was like little blacked out sections, so I don't know if the information either just didn't pertain to what they were talking about or maybe they were names of some minors or something like that. Jermaine Lowe goes in because his parole officer told him that the Arkansas State Police are looking for Andre and need to know any information that might help them with the murders and the arson. Jermaine Lowe had pled guilty to a robbery charge himself back in 92. He knew and had spoken to Andre at some point following this incident. He learned from Andre that there was only like $1,700 in the house. He had heard word around town that whoever had done that to Miss Sally was probably hurt. And when he saw Andre, he was missing a tooth like it got knocked out. Apparently, Andre had gone to the hospital but used an assumed name. And I think if the legwork would have been done, the Arkansas State Police and the investigators probably could have found documentation of a visit regardless of what name was used. As of today, really one hospital nearby. It's a Baptist in West Memphis, like 30-minute drive. Helena, Arkansas is the next closest at an hour and a half of a drive. It is possible maybe he went to a smaller clinic, but I feel like with the rumors of Sally and Lee's deaths, the word would have spread like really fast.
So what was all wrong with him? He had his tooth knocked out?
Yeah.
That's it?
That's as far as I know.
It's not that big of an emergency.
No, but if someone around town said he went to a hospital...
Did they find his tooth?
Under a fake name. I don't know.
That would have been helpful, too.
Right. Anyways, Jermaine said that Andre never said anything about killing anyone when he ran into him. And then, apparently, when Jermaine was at Percy's Pool Hall, which is in Paragould, which is an hour 45 from Horseshoe Lake, Andre called up there looking for someone to help him get to Memphis. It's like maybe he's on the run or something.
All a bunch of thieves and criminals, I swear. Mm-hmm.
Arkansas State Police track down Andre and they brought him in. They question him, polygraph him. He failed that. No surprise. Andre is adamant that he didn't do it, that he wasn't who murdered the two or set the house on fire. He told investigators he wasn't even in Horseshoe Lake that day. His girlfriend did confirm his alibi. All they really had was word of mouth, and one of those people talking was a felon for robbery himself. Like, I don't know how believable that is. They weren't going to hold him, but they do take DNA, fingerprints, and a hair sample. They take the samples from both boys and compare them to the evidence taken from Sally's wrecked Camry. Only matches come back to Travis. There was nothing forensically tying his friend Andre, not to the car, not to the house. And then, of course, there's that eyewitness, Joseph Jones, who said he saw two young black males in the car. Was his memory faulty? We've heard that eyewitnesses are sometimes the most unreliable. So maybe Mr. Jones constructed something differently in his mind. Maybe he wears glasses normally but didn't that day. Or maybe he was caught off guard and he turned around with just enough time to see the car speed by. I mean, it could be anything.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Or he could be right.
Or he could be right. Maybe Andre jumped out in the middle of the drive or something. I don't know.
Was there two different sets of fingerprints in the car?
They only ever found Travis.
But I mean, was there any other fingerprints in the car?
Well, I'm sure there were Sally's and probably family members. But as far as like the hair and the headliner, that was Travis's. And then his DNA was on the windshield.
And that was the driver's side.
Mm-hmm. This meant that the only person left to be involved was Travis Lewis.
How the heck did he wreck the car?
Well,
he didn't have a license,
maybe.
He's
15 or 16. Maybe he's just not experienced. And if he's, you know,
freaking out, looking back behind
him,
trying to see if the house was on fire yet.
Yeah, maybe. And just lost control and hit the tree and then it turned over in the ditch. They had arrested Travis on November 5th with two Class B felonies, residential burglary and theft of property, and two Class Y felonies, murder in the first degree for each victim. He was tried as an adult, which caused quite an uproar, but what was done to Sally and Lee was intentional, clearly. He would end up pleading guilty to all charges, April 7th, 1998, so it took 2 years. The B felonies would give him 60 months, but he was given 342 months or 28 and a half years for the murder charges. Travis Lewis was represented by Bill Llewellyn, who actually passed away last year in 2023. Mr. Llewellyn was a big advocate for small rural school districts that didn't have a lot of resources like the big ones do. He helped those little ones fight against consolidation and unfair and impartial treatment. I don't know if it was that, plus he just wanted more and better for his communities, that he took Travis's case. Hughes was a small town right along with Horseshoe Lake. The lack of resources, lack of opportunities, and then Travis Lewis, by all accounts, was a above average student.
He take it pro bono?
That I don't know. Probably not. Mr. Llewellyn worked with the prosecution for a better deal. In Arkansas, for a capital murder charge, it's either be put to death or you stay in prison until you die. Just a few days before the trial, the prosecution came up with a plea. Travis would have to admit to the double murder, which he's always claimed he was innocent of. While he was admitting to that in court, he also admitted that, yes, he was there when the murders occurred, but he kept saying that there was an adult who committed the killings. So it's like he's taking ownership of what happened, but at the same time, he's trying to still say there's somebody else there, that he was innocent. And this is a fun fact. I don't know if you noticed or not, but I've named it a couple times. West Memphis is in Crittenden County. The same judge that was supposed to be over Travis Lewis's case was the same judge that in 1993 was over the West Memphis 3 case. And that was Judge David Burnett.
Interesting.
And, of course, he was scrutinized for that case, but Travis's didn't even go to trial, so he had no say in this instance. It was just the prosecution and Travis's defense that did all the work.
I'm sure he was in on the plea stuff.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, he wasn't, like, as involved as he was in the West Memphis 3 case.
Right.
Following Sally's death, her sister Edie took over duties as manager of the Snowden house. Sally's daughter Martha McKay also came in to help her aunt until things kind of settled down. And Martha was like a project kind of girl. She had done many renovations to many historical homes and other buildings in different cities. After helping her aunt, she went back off. And then in 2004, she decided that she wanted to bring her skills back to the Snowden house, bring it back to life, to its former glory, and she took over the Snowden house. Martha's goal was to redo the house to make it habitable for her to live in, and then also be this beautiful place to host weddings or parties or whatever she wanted. And Martha would eventually be given the nickname the Lady of the Lake. During her time back in 1996 and then returning to Horseshoe Lake, Martha would go and visit Gladys Lewis, Travis's mom. The families used to be close back in the day. And even though it was her own mother, and then Lee Baker, who I think was her first cousin, was killed, Martha was one of the few that did think Travis was innocent. She had written to him while he was incarcerated. She had felt for him and was saddened by all the events surrounding her family's tragedy. She also knew that his family had suffered. She believed him when he told her that someone else was involved, so much so that she pressed to have the case reopened and reexamined. And when that turned up nothing new, she sought out private investigators. I don't know if anything ever came from them either. One of the things Martha did to help and show her support is that she hired Gladys to be the housekeeper for the Snowden house. And over the years, the two women grew closer, Gladys becoming more like a family member than an employee. And of course, Gladys loved and adored Martha right back. In 2016, Travis Lewis had his first parole hearing. His family and Martha McKay showed up. After both sides speak, parole board does its thing. He's denied.
Really?
2 years pass, and he has another one. Again, his family and Martha show. This time in 2018, he's given that parole.
I figured Martha was trying to talk him into letting him get out.
He had served 20 out of the 28 years, which was what was required at 70% of his sentence. His brother, Edric Smith, told him to go somewhere new and just start fresh. But of course, Travis went back home. He went back to Mama. Martha was the only Snowden, McKay, Baker family member that was happy about this. She thought Travis deserved a second chance at life, so she hired him to be the groundskeeper at the Snowden house. Things seemed to go well for a couple years. Then, $10,000 in cash went missing from Martha's office. She had sold a chandelier. Martha would end up firing Travis, knowing it was probably him who took it. He was the only one besides her at the house that day when she returned with the money. She banned him from the grounds. March 13th, 2020, Travis would be arrested for possession of an instrument of crime, which is a misdemeanor, and then possession of a controlled substance, either meth or cocaine. He was fined for the misdemeanor, but the charges were never filed for the drug possession. Him getting into some trouble should have been a warning or a sign. Even Gladys, his own mother, told Martha to stay away from Travis because he had gone back to his old ways. So we're going to jump forward a little over a week to Wednesday, March 25th. Crittenden County deputies respond to a house alarm at the Snowden home. They enter the house through the already opened back door. They start to clear the house and then heard movements above them. The next thing they saw was a man jumping from a second story window. He was running towards a car. When he tried to get away in that car, it got stuck in the mud. So he gets back out of the car and he ran and he jumped into the lake. And that man was never seen again. The police waited for him to resurface from the water, and he never did. Inside the Snowden house, the deputies found what they thought was a pile of blankets, but underneath, hidden, was the body of 63-year-old Martha McKay. Near her body was a bag of items like jewelry. Things of that sort were inside, and a bloody knife. Martha had been stabbed to death and maybe even beaten with something else, maybe a hammer. Theft may have been the motive, and maybe Martha caught the burglar in the act. Maybe he meant to kill her in the process. Either way, it was strange that the deputies also smelled something near her body. The blanket covering Martha had been doused in something, meaning the burglar was probably planning on burning Martha to hide what he did, or maybe try to burn the whole house down.
That sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. The deputies called everyone in, including the Arkansas Game and Fish and the Crittenden County Search and Rescue. They teamed up to go over the lake, and they found the body of the man, their suspect, and when they do, and they pull him out of the water, Travis Lewis. His autopsy later would show that he had a mixture of meth, marijuana, and cocaine in his system at the time of his drowning. Who would have ever guessed that one man would be responsible for two murders, Sally Snowden McKay and Lee Baker, then 24 years later kill Martha McKay, the youngest daughter of Sally McKay, on the same property? And that is the case of the Horseshoe Lake Triple murders.
I could have guessed it.
Yeah, well. It's just crazy. You've got these two that get killed and they get lit on fire. And then 24 years later, same family, same house.
What did he have against them? Jesus. His mom loved him.
Yeah. He was, I don't know if he was that bad of a seed growing up.
He obviously never learned how to drive.
No.
I was wondering the whole time when the told you so part was going to show up. And I was like, oh, there it is.
And the deja vu.
Deja vu.
Deja vu, I told you so.
Happened all over again.
Joe Baker, Lisa, and the one that became a deputy, he was saying on one of the interviews that when Martha started writing to Travis in prison, he's like, don't do it. Don't do it. Cut ties. And
he had her right where he wanted her.
Yeah. And then, of course, she's, you know, went to speak on his behalf at the parole hearings. And again, Joe Baker was like, don't do it. It's not going to happen the way you want it to happen.
He was denied the first time, probably because of the way he acted while he was in prison.
I don't know.
I wonder, like, did he gang up or maybe did he do other bad things while he was in prison?
Maybe that second time, less people showed to talk against him. And so they didn't have anybody to rebuttal against.
Yeah, did the rest of the Baker family show up to
speak
out against him?
I know they did the first one, yes.
Okay.
But the second one, I'm not sure.
Hmm. Well, that drug problem had to show up somewhere, you know, so he probably
started in prison.
Yeah, I imagine.
Had to have. If he gets out and it's less than, he got arrested 2 years after he got let out, but that doesn't mean he wasn't hooking up or doing something in the meantime those 2 years. He just got caught.
That's a lot of stuff to be in your system. Yeah. He had to afford it somehow.
Well, he stole $10,000, apparently.
Pretty crazy story. Good job, love.
Yay, Arkansas.
I swear.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
That was a whirlwind of a story. Well, that wraps up today's episode. Thank y'all for listening. We will be back again next week. In the meantime, go check us out on Instagram. We've got a few funny memes on there that
Jesse made.
They crack me up. Until next time, stay local, shop local,
murder local.